the questions from you, from chamber members, that are going to affect your businesses and your pocketbook. So that's why we will have shotgun type questions. We will give them 2 minutes opening remarks and then 60 second answers. Do I have a timekeeper? I have a timekeeper somewhere, yes. And you want to show them the color of your, that's 15 seconds and stop. That means I get to interrupt you when the red one comes up, okay? We want to get to as many of the questions as we can, and we have quite a few of them. So this is information I got yesterday from the Department of Elections. This is District D, as in dog. We used to be O, now we are D. And the candidates are Andy Sissick, Tuckerman Babcock, and Jesse Borkman. Now, as of yesterday, unless a candidate drops out, there will be ranked choice voting in this race, okay? So now we got that all cleared away. 2 minute opening remarks, 60 seconds to close, 60 second answers. Let's start with Tuckerman Babcock with the opening remark, please.
All right, thank you very much, Merrill, and thank you, chamber members and guests, for being here. My name is Tuckerman Babcock, and I'm running for the State Senate. I have lived in Alaska since 1966. I dragged up here with my three younger sisters by my father and mother. My father was drawn to Alaska by mountains, and he was a major mountain climber in Alaska. He helped found the School of Mountaineering and Wilderness Survival at the University of Alaska. In fact, he named me Tuckerman after the first mountain he ever climbed in New Hampshire. Tuckerman Ravine on Mount Washington. And I'm just glad he didn't name me after the first mountain he climbed in Mexico, which was Ixtlahuacopotl. And that would have been a bit of a challenge for me. I have been involved in civic affairs for about 40 years and all over the state, and mainly in helping and encouraging people to run for office and serve in office. And it's been a very rewarding part of my life. How I have given back to the community on the civic affairs side, and been everything from city council and school boards and Senate and House and governor, even presidential candidates. I was very involved in the Steve Forbes campaign in 96 and 2000, and I co-chaired the Dole for President campaign with Senator Murkowski, the Frank Murkowski, in 1996. Been involved a long time. Along the way, I married Christy, my wife, who's here. Thank you, Christy. And she's the state farm agent here in Kenai. Together we have 8 children and, believe it or not, 15 grandchildren, all 6 and under. So that's very busy and very fun as a grandfather. And that's one of the reasons I'm running. Alaska really has been good to me. It's good for my children, and I want to help make it great for my grandchildren and yours. Here comes the red sign, so thank you.
Thank you, Tuckerman. Just one other piece of information is that these are both registered Republicans, and Andy Sissick is an I, an independent. So, Mr. Borkman, your opening remarks, please.
Thank you, Merrill. Thank you, everyone. My name is Jesse Bjorkman. I have a beautiful wife, Jamie, who is here today, a son, Blake, who is 7, and a daughter, who is 3, named Brenna. I decided to run for state senate because working families and small businesses deserve a state senator that works for everyone, not just one faction of a political party. We can continue to plow through tomorrows by electing career party politicians who make the same slate of promises but deliver no results. When I talk to Alaskans on the Kenai, you're concerned about economic stability, public safety, roads, and schools. Your priorities are my work orders. We must have fiscal stability in our state. We need a spending cap that prioritizes basic necessary services over special interests. I will not support new taxes on hardworking Alaskans. We must promote lean, high efficient government while protecting core government services. Also, we must protect our senior citizens' way of life, not cut their benefits and price them out of pioneer homes or other assisted living facilities that they rely on. Public safety and justice are paramount. We need to fully fund troopers and staff our prisons, not hire hatchet men who would needlessly close Wildwood Prison. We must improve our roads, keep them plowed, and build them right the first time. We must keep Silvertip Station open and all essential facilities operational to keep commerce moving and our traveling residents safe. We must deliver educational excellence in our schools and ensure that students and educators are supported in learning 21st century skills every day. We can never again have a budget plan that would divide Alaskans, devastate and destabilize our economy like the budget my opponent helped craft in 2019. Voters of the Kenai Peninsula have a clear choice in this race. I am fighting for families, freedom, and your way of life. I will be your senator who sees all citizens as my constituents. It would be my honor to be your voice in Juneau. I'm asking for your vote. I can win this race with your help. Please find out more at my website, www.jessebjorkman.com, or call me on my personal cell, 394-6796. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. You'll be first with the question. We're going to get right into it. What is your opinion on ranked choice voting? And if elected, would you work to repeal? And if so, what would you support to replace it?
Thank you, Merrill. It's been no secret that as an individual in 2020 that I initially supported the idea of ranked choice voting. I've never made a secret of that. However, the people spoke clearly in this district during this election, and almost 60% of the people in this district said that they oppose ranked choice voting. And as your senator in Juneau, I will work to repeal ranked choice voting. We need to go back to a system of one person, one vote that people can easily understand and move forward.
Okay, one person, one vote. What would that mean? How would that change things from ranked choice voting? Would we go back to the old system?
One person for each race would fill in one oval.
Okay, so we'd go back to the primary system the way we have it.
One person, one oval, yep.
Okay, Tuckerman, same question. We're talking about ranked choice voting, whether you support it, and what you would want to, if repealed, replace it with.
Right, well, you know, one of the things we're all used to in campaigns is things get a little heated, and I'm going to stay away from the kind of negative stuff, but you can't also run away from your record. And the record is in 2020, November 1st, which is just before the election, my opponent loved ranked choice voting. Now, in that election, 65% of the Kenai Peninsula voted no on ranked choice voting. During the campaign, I'm glad to see he's changed his opinion. I've been consistent that this ranked choice experiment was going to waste millions of dollars and be a terrible mistake. And repealing it, we can do as soon as we get down to Juneau in January, and I'll be working to do that. And I certainly agree with my opponent's position, his new position, that one person, one vote is a good system. It worked well, and we should go back to that. And I'm sorry the state had to waste these millions of dollars on this experiment.
Okay, well, just a quick little follow-up, because I did this with Jesse as well. And obviously, there was discontent with the system before. And if we're going to just revert back to the primary that we had, which is open primaries, closed primaries, should there be some kind of a change in the primary election if we eliminate ranked choice?
Well, what's going to happen is the Alaskans are going to elect a new Senate and a new House. There's going to be a huge number of new people down there. Regardless of which candidate wins this race, one of us will be new. And what will happen is a bill will be introduced, it'll go through the committee process, you'll hear all kinds of testimony, public testimony, and we'll see what it is, that if there are any tweaks to the old system, but no question that ranked choice needs to be repealed.
Okay, thank you. And you will go first on the second question. What is your stand on executive branch employees taking loyalty oaths, and why?
Well, there never was a loyalty oath. That's a fiction of the media. And just like every administration, when Governor Dunleavy came into office, the at-will employees were asked to submit letters of resignation. And that had been done in the past. The one thing the governor did differently was he invited all the at-will employees to submit letters of resignation. And that list was actually provided by Governor Walker and his staff. So we just took that list, and the governor asked for resignations, and we took it from there.
Okay, Jesse, the same question, your stand on executive branch employees taking loyalty oaths, and why?
Thank you, Merrill. I don't think anyone should have to pledge loyalty to an elected official in order to keep their job. The Supreme Court ruled very clearly on this issue, and it was the words of my opponent that I think really sealed that case against the governor and himself, and ultimately wound up costing the state of Alaska about $500,000 that the state of Alaska and you had to pay for to settle that case. And I think that's important to note. As we kind of look at our leaders, we look at local government, and certainly in my experience on local government, I've been on the borough assembly for 3 years, so I've always been very cognizant of protecting the borough from liability, protecting the borough from additional expenditure and exposure to these types of lawsuits. And no one should have to pledge loyalty or say that they want to definitely be a part of a team, no matter how you phrase it, in order to keep their job.
Okay, thank you. Your turn to go first on the next one, Jesse. Where do you see common ground in the legislature for a long-term fiscal plan? And are there items that you see as non-negotiable?
Fiscal stability is going to be my number one priority when I go to Juneau. That's the number one priority that I hear from small business owners and folks as I go all around the Kenai Peninsula and talk to everyday folks here. A fiscal plan really has to include, for me, and it must have, a commitment to a spending cap that works to prioritize the needs of working families and core essential services here in Alaska. Also, we cannot have taxes on people who work and producers in order to give money away to people who choose not to work, because that just doesn't work, folks. We've seen that time and time again. So I will not support any new taxes on Alaskans, but what I will do is we need to develop a lean budget that delivers core essential services efficiently, and we need to truly work together with everyone for fiscal stability in this state.
Okay, thank you. And Tuckerman, what do you see as common ground for the legislature and a long-term fiscal plan and items that you see as non-negotiable?
Well, a fiscal plan is top of the agenda. I mean, we're both Republicans and we want a balanced budget and a fiscally responsible government and a government that maximizes freedom for individuals and for businesses. And the trouble is that there are so many people who have a connection to government. And I don't know if my opponent's reference to free money meant he thought the dividend was free money. Well, maybe that'll be cleared up later. But one of the things that we all have to be aware of, and I think as business owners you are aware of, that people who work for the government are doing a great job, they have provide a great service, but their interest is in government and government spending. That's their priority. And it's important to have people who can step back from that and make a judgment about where the state's headed and how we finance this state. A zero-based budget is a good way to start. You look at your expected income, you put together the essential services of the state, you move forward from there. A spending cap, that's a statutory cap, a law won't have any effect. We need a constitutional amendment.
Okay, thank you. We're gonna move on to the next question, which we might as well get out of the way. Okay, and just as a disclaimer, I did edit this essay down to a question, okay? And you know, we're not talking about personal flotation devices at this time. Okay, the recent oil price decline has eaten away a $1.4 billion budget surplus and has been signed into law earlier this year. The PFD amount is said to be $3,200 as part of the budget process. While this number is short of the statutory PFD amount, what is your proposed solution to paying a dividend and funding necessary state services all within a balanced budget?
You want me to go first?
Sure.
All right. So there's been a lot of misinformation about the permanent fund dividend. The permanent fund dividend is a tiny portion of the royalty that the owners of the underground resources in Alaska deserve. It has nothing to do with free money. It's your royalty money, and you're already taxed at 90%. The state takes 90% of the royalty. If you lived in any other state, where would the royalty go? To the owners. The owners of Prudhoe Bay, of oil development on state land, are the citizens of this state. 25% is taken aside, and the earnings of that, just half of the earnings of that 25%, are distributed as a dividend. Does not affect the budget, does not affect any state spending. But you can tax the dividend, you can cut the dividend, and take the dividend from children, seniors, homemakers, etc. That's a non-negotiable for me, that the dividend is a tax, and if you're going to talk about taxing, then let's talk about all the taxes, but the dividend is not the first go-to tax.
Okay, thank you. Jesse, you're familiar with this issue. I'm not going to repeat the question. Go for the PFD.
Thanks, Merrill. Ultimately, as we look at balanced budgeting, we need to have truth in budgeting and stop the shell games about where the money is and going and the story that we tell about it. The 2019 budget that my opponent helped craft put in clear relief where the money came from and where the money went. Their desire in crafting that budget was to have the money in cash to pay a full PFD at that time. Where did they get the money? They got the money from all across the state in cuts. Their proposal was to close, by cutting education funding, at least one-third of the schools on the Kenai Peninsula. It included closing Wildwood Prison, sending prisoners out of state. Also, it included making sure that our borough and our service areas were not able to collect oil and gas property taxes. This would have cost you, as taxpayers, big in either the services that you receive or the property taxes that you have to pay. There is no free money. It doesn't grow on trees. It has to come from somewhere. So if you're going to promise a PFD, a full PFD, you have to promise a solution on how to pay for it.
Okay, thank you, Jesse. Had to interrupt you there. We're moving on to the next question. What's your opinion? Jesse, you'll take this one first. The AK LNG project, otherwise known as pipe dreaming, and what should the state do to move this dream forward?
Very good, Merrill. We need to develop all of our resources for the maximum benefit of all Alaskans. We have to. The AK LNG project is an excellent opportunity for our residents of the Kenai Peninsula, business owners here, and people who desire to work and build meaningful lives for themselves to move forward prosperously into the future. The state of Alaska needs to do whatever it can to streamline permitting processes and work well with our industry partners as well as our federal partners in order to make this project happen. We have to have common sense solutions for workforce development to train our workers to work on this project as much as they can. Also, we need to be willing to invest in the infrastructure that is going to make the building of this project possible and also incorporate this project into the fabric of our community. Because what we can't do is we cannot repeat the chaos of the pipeline days and have snarled up traffic in our communities for years on end while this thing is built. We have to be committed to facilitating the project and seeing it through to completion.
Thank you, Tuckerman. On the AKLNG, your support and a specific thing that might be done for the state to help move this project finally forward.
Well, I think there's a lot being done right now behind the scenes and discussions with the Japanese and discussions with the private companies, and the state being very cooperative with both. And it's going to be best if it's moved forward by private industry. The federal delegation has done a fantastic job of getting a major loan guarantee that's moved the whole project forward. I don't think that the kind of public presentations and exclamations that the former governor made to Governor Walker were very helpful, and they were very close now, closer than we've been in a long time. And I certainly don't disagree with any of the rhetoric that my opponent just used. That's, of course, what we want to do to establish a new pipeline. And we need to make sure we have gas offtake in the interior and here so that we have enough natural gas to fund our electric and our industry.
Okay, thank you very much. Tuckerman, you're first on this next one. If elected, would you prioritize the reopening of the local Kenai office for child care assistance?
Well, any government, would I prioritize it? I'm going to defend our local activities, our local offices. But it's all going to be decided within the context of the budget and what money is available. And we've talked about the 2019 budget. I've taken a couple of hits over here. What happened in 2019 is that Governor Dunleavy decided for the first time to present a budget that honestly reflected income and expenditure. And that budget went out for debate. And during the debate, the priorities that the legislature and Alaskans wanted came to the forefront. And we, for the first time, actually were able to see what the price of these different things were. And in that context, Wildwood was approved to keep going. The taxes were not cut for local government taxes. What is so interesting about it is to be criticized for actually putting a clear, transparent plan forward, which the governor did. And I'm very proud that he did that. And I'm proud of the discussion that followed. Thank you.
Thank you. Same question to you, Jesse. If elected, would you prioritize the reopening of the local Kenai Office of Child Care Assistance?
We need to prioritize child care and mental health in this state because there are so many families and young people that are hurting because of life situations that they find themselves in. The ultimate support for our families to improve their situation and continue to build worthwhile and meaningful lives for themselves is to improve our economy and to grow our economy by encouraging businesses and employment opportunities as well as entrepreneurial opportunities here as well. That's how we ultimately do right by our families and our young people, is by growing educational opportunities for them, improving their workplace opportunities. Also, we need to make sure that our economy continues to thrive. And that's what we really need to do. There's no free lunch in any of this. There are lots of folks that feel like they need support, but ultimately, a strong economy is going to be the best tide that raises all boats. But until we can raise those boats, we need to offer some folks help along the way.
Okay, thank you. You're up first on this one. Your position on calling a state constitutional convention, please.
I think the calling of a constitutional convention is an interesting one. There are many things in our state constitution that could be changed and could be improved. However, as many have pointed out, there are many things in our state constitution that could be in danger as well, like how our fish resources are allocated, or how our mining resources are allocated, or many other list of things. One thing that I would like to change structurally in our constitution is I would like to see an elected attorney general, an attorney general that is accountable to the people and his staff to be accountable to the people to enforce the laws and see that criminals are brought to justice. I think that could be one very good positive change that could come out of a constitutional convention. However, there are already ways that we can clearly change the Constitution, and that's through the legislative process. And if enough people get seriously behind changes that they want to see in the Constitution, the legislature, together with the people, can change the Constitution. But either way, the people will get a say.
Okay, but just to clarify, constitutional convention, yes or no?
I think the people have an interesting choice ahead of them, and there are good things or bad things that could come out of it.
So it's a maybe.
Yes.
Okay, Tuckerman, it's on the Constitutional Convention. Your position, please.
Well, I've considered it carefully, and first of all, I want to. It's a nice to have an opportunity to agree with my opponent on the previous question regarding the child care and the importance of mental health and the incredible assets that we do have available to fund mental health in the state if they were being used more efficiently and effectively. We can talk about that at another time. But on the Constitutional Convention, I will be voting yes, but I urge every person to make up their own mind and consider the question carefully. And just keep this in mind when you hear fear over promises of how great a Constitutional Convention will be or fear that it's going to be a disaster. The people who wrote our Constitution in 1955, they're the ones who put in a mandate that every 10 years we have an opportunity to vote on yes or no on a constitutional convention. They weren't afraid of the people. I'm not afraid of the people. And if enough structural problems exist, in your opinion, that should be addressed, the constitutional convention should be a yes. If you don't think there are structural problems that should be addressed in that way, vote no.
Okay, here's a good follow-up to that, and it's along the same gender. In a time of extreme polarization on issues, such as a constitutional convention, or others that affect family, friends, and business community here at this joint chamber meeting, what would you suggest can be done to find consensus and moderate the great divide in state politics?
Well, one of the presumptions, Merrill, in your question is that there was a time when there wasn't a great divide. If you go back all the way to the beginning of American history, the conflict that existed between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and on throughout all the decades, there are always big issues on the table that cause a lot of division. And there are many, many issues, well, such as roads or public safety, where we can totally agree and move forward. It's a matter of style. So if you have a strong principle and a strong opinion, express that, talk about it. You don't have to make someone your enemy. In my own family, my youngest sister and I love each other very much. She is as far left as a human being can be. She thinks Elizabeth Warren is too conservative. But we love each other, we get along, we can actually talk about politics. We can't really talk about President Trump, but everything else we can talk about. And that's the style I brought as chairman of the Republican Party with our 80 volunteers on a statewide basis. And I'll bring that same style of principled but moderate approach in Juneau.
Thank you.
Sorry, I went over.
Thank you. And Jesse, on the Great Divide, are you a bridge builder? Are there bridges that can be built so that we could go forward for the best interest of Alaska?
I absolutely think so, Merrill. And I've done that on the Borough Assembly. I've guided many pieces of legislation through the Borough Assembly that could have been controversial, but we got unanimous or nearly unanimous support. We had an election integrity bill that we passed. We had a bill that passed by a large majority to declare this borough a Second Amendment sanctuary. And we've done other things as well as promote fire danger mitigation with promoting fire fuel breaks. I've proven that I can work across the aisle. And it concerns me as I see different Senate majority funds get set up that prove to be divisive. I see a person's history of moving from one job to another. I don't see that as a track record of bridging the divide. I have been able to bring people together to provide solutions. We got schools open here on the Kenai Peninsula because of myself leading groups of moms and dads who wanted to see their kids back in school. We were able to open sooner than many other places in the state. I've done the work and I can do it again.
Thank you. Jesse, and this is kind of a follow-up to the sequence that we're on right now. I'll call it a Goldilocks question. Is the current education funding formula too low, too high, or just right?
Well, Merrill, we can see what happens in our schools, and people can make judgments on the amount of open positions we have, the lack of bus drivers that we have, and the needs that our children have in schools right now. Certainly, there are always efficiencies that you can find to do things better with the money that you have, but eventually, at the end of the day, less is less. The BSA hasn't been increased since 2017. Meanwhile, the cost of healthcare and health insurance really shrink down the amount of available dollars that are available to educate our kids. And we need to find solutions. There is something that we can do to bring down the cost of healthcare, to free up more money for education services, as well as free up more money for your businesses and your employees and make it easier to provide for healthcare. We need to make education competitive in this state so that we can deliver educational excellence every day to our students. And I have ideas and plans to make that happen.
Thank you. And Mr. Babcock, the funding formula for education, too low, too high, or just right?
Well, money is not the answer in education. A refocus on parents being the first line of responsibility in the education of their children is going to deliver a better result. We have been throwing more money at education than any other state in this country, and it's on all different levels. And we are now ranked, what, 48th, 49th, 50th? There's no excuse for that. And it's a combination of a monopoly system, it's a combination of the bureaucracy not wanting to change, it's a combination of the schools getting larger and larger. On the Kenai Peninsula, we have a good school system. It's better than most, to be sure. But I think if we refocus on parents having the responsibility, the first responsibility on the type of education for their children, we're going to end up with a better product.
Okay, thank you. Continuing along the same line, Tuckerman, in a state with some 750,000 total population, I'm sure they're talking about Alaska, should we have three major state university campuses? Again, are we spending too much, too little, or just right?
Well, the University of Alaska was set up as a land-grant college. They have a ton of acreage. And I have done battle with the university over many years on whether or not they're going to just keep that land vacant or put that land into economic use and help fund the university the way they were supposed to. I think that the university coming year after year to the state of Alaska for a massive subsidy for their system should be replaced with them relying on the million acres that they have to economically provide for the university. We'd like to talk to the other legislators about an endowment fund for the university so that they never have to come back to the legislature for ongoing costs. There's a Board of Regents in our Constitution. They are responsible for how many campuses there are. They are responsible for independent decision making. It's how our Constitution was set up. We had four of our children go to the University of Alaska system, and they had excellent engineering program in Fairbanks, and our oldest son is an engineer here at Marathon, and we're very proud of that. It's a great school, but it needs to get its finances in order.
Thank you. Okay, moving right along, Jesse, in Alaska, three major state university campuses. Are we spending too little, too much, or just right?
Well, ultimately, Merrill, we need to make sure that just like our K through 12 education, our universities are competitive and that Alaskans are able to attend those universities if they want to. One of the things that we can save money by doing is having higher admission standards for the university system. If kids want to go to the University of Alaska Anchorage, they need to achieve a certain level of academic competence. Then we would eliminate the university complaining that they're giving remedial courses to kids who probably should not have been at the university in the first place. We need to prioritize programs in a way that are going to deliver results. And to do that, we can reduce some of what the university does. We can move a lot of the energy study projects into the Alaska Energy Authority and quit the duplication of services. We need to provide real opportunities in the university system for students to be successful instead of setting them up for a really hard time there. We need to have higher standards for students.
Okay, thank you. And you're first, Jesse. Okay, your opinion on cash-based forward funding for education.
Forward funding provides a level of stability going forward for schools to plan. If the money is there and able to do that, that is okay. However, if the money is not there, the Supreme Court has ruled that you cannot forward fund based on money that might come because you would be biting the hands of the legislature in the next year. People need to be aware of where the money is coming from. We need to have a truth in budgeting approach where people are clear about what their money is being spent on and what it can deliver. That's what I want to do as your state senator, is deliver a straightforward approach to where your money comes from and where it goes. We need to be able to have a sustainable solution that allows us to plow the roads, keep them well maintained, to provide for troopers and keep the bad guys locked up when they're in jail, as well as provide for an excellent education for every student every day.
Thank you. Talking about the same question, it's on cash-based forward funding for education.
Well, given some of the limited fireworks up here, it's nice to completely agree with my opponent on what he just said. And as far as the cash, it was Governor Dunleavy that took it to court that said this forward funding without cash is not going to work. And it took a long time to work its way through the system, but eventually he prevailed, and we can see that you can't dedicate funds that you don't have for future legislatures not to have the choice about spending. And all the services, whether it's the troopers or our prisons or the roads, they all would like the stability and the knowledge of what's going to happen in the next year. So with education, it's the timing of hiring that they really like to know how much money will be available going forward. If we happen to have a massive budget surplus, I have no objection to forward funding education with actual cash on hand.
Okay, this next question is not relative to the state Senate, but it's been submitted, and I think it shows an interest on where both of you candidates are on the October election, where there will be three bond propositions. We're going to expand the time limit. We're going to give them 90 seconds because this is kind of a lengthy question. But your stand on the local bond propositions for the Kenai Peninsula Borough.
You're right, it has nothing to do with my campaign for the state Senate. And I've been so focused on the campaign, I'm not ready to tell you how I'm going to vote on all those propositions. I'm sure my opponent can. He's running for the borough assembly and the state Senate at the same time, and so I'm sure he's quite up to speed on how he's going to vote on those. But I'll get back to you on that one. You're right, it's got nothing to do with the state Senate.
Okay. Jesse, on the bond propositions, it'll be before the voters in October.
Thank you, Merrill. There are three questions on the ballot. Two of them are bond propositions, if I recall correctly. The three questions are whether or not to accept a redistricting plan, which I support a redistricting plan that would leave 9 members on the borough assembly, as well as 9 members on the school board. And the two bond propositions are both supported by the mayor, as well as the assembly. And the bond proposition that would rebuild a fire station for Soldotna is desperately needed. It will provide for the ability for Soldotna to have decreased response times, making those communities served by that station safer and be able to decrease fires as well as respond quickly when there's heart attacks or strokes. The other bond package has to do with primarily school maintenance and deferred maintenance, making sure that the facilities that the borough owns are well maintained, and we can save money by taking care of those maintenance issues now instead of waiting and paying more money to do those things later. I will be supporting the redistricting plan that yields 9 members on the school board and the borough assembly, and both of the bond propositions. The bond propositions from Finance Director Harbaugh would not increase taxes because of our decreasing bonded indebtedness that we have right now going forward.
Okay, thank you. And for our timekeepers, we're going to give them 90 seconds on this next one because it is kind of a lengthy question. They're asking for the top 3 priorities of each candidate to accomplish in your first term in the state Senate. Give me 3 of your top priorities, and I think it's Tuckerman's turn to go first. Jesse's turn to go first. Okay.
Thanks, Merrill. My top 3 priorities. Number 1, we have to have fiscal stability in this state. We need a plan going forward that does not tax hardworking Alaskans, but it also needs to deliver core necessary services in a very efficient way. We need to be honest about what those things cost and what our choices are in order to pay for them, because you can't have it all. When oil is at $55 a barrel, you could close every school, every one of them, in the state of Alaska, and you would still have a deficit. We need to be honest about where we're at, the services that people want, and how people would like to pay for them. Number 2 is public safety. We need to provide for safe roads, troopers, and prisons that keep bad guys locked up when they deserve to be there. We need our people to be safe as they live and work and play here on the Kenai Peninsula. Finally, my next priority is to increase standards for our students in schools and provide an excellent education for every student every day. We can involve parents. I've been talking for months about involving parents more in our schools by involving people in site-based councils and encouraging parents to get involved. I've engaged parents on returning to school without mitigations or mandates, and we've been successful in that. We have been successful in that work because people truly care about these issues, about education and public safety, and they want to see those things funded and not cut.
Thank you. And your top 3 priorities in your first term, if elected, Tuckerman?
Thank you, Merrill. Well, the first priority is a fiscal plan. And a majority of the legislature supports a fiscal plan. It's when you get into the details, they start breaking down. And listening to my opponent, I think he's got a very good grasp of the borough assembly and the issues on the borough assembly. And I'm glad he's running for re-election there. I'm just chiding him a little bit. As far as the top 3 priorities, the fiscal plan is the first top priority. The second is every law, every regulation, every action of the legislature is either increasing or decreasing your freedom. Your freedom to operate as individuals, your freedom to operate as a business. And after 40 years of being involved in civic affairs, my focus is on every bill, on every regulation, on every action the legislature takes to increase your personal freedom, to increase the freedom of your business to operate, and to increase the opportunity for your children and grandchildren to have economically fruitful lives in Alaska. And that's what my focus is going to be.
Thank you. Okay, next question. With only R's and an I in this particular race, where do you think the D vote should go?
Well, I think both my opponent and I are basically conservative Republicans, and the Democrats who vote, I would encourage them to vote for me. As I said, I get along beautifully with my younger sister. I treat, and you can ask her. She lives in Massachusetts, no surprise. But it's treating each person as an individual. It doesn't really matter whether you're registered for a constituent. If you're a registered Democrat, nonpartisan, Republican, you're going to be treated the same by me. You are a constituent. And there will be areas where we agree and areas where we disagree, regardless of your political party and regardless of where you're coming from. There's a whole wide universe of issues and factors that come into play, and being open to the discussion and being responsive to every constituent, I hope will provide the foundation for Democrats to choose me over the Republican and nonpartisan in the race.
Okay, thank you very much. Jesse, the same question, basically. You know, where should the, of course, you can always write in on the ballot, but other than that, with only 2 R's and an I in this race, where should the Democratic vote go?
Well, Merrill, I think, you know, George Washington really warned us strongly against political parties and factions in his farewell address, and we talked a lot about that. But ultimately, my opponent's right. People need to judge us on our individual characteristics, and they need to judge us on our record and our past and what we've done and the things that we're known for. I'm known for bringing people together to get solutions, to make things happen for working families in this borough. I've dedicated my life to public service here in this borough and educating our students, as well as defending the interests of working people, as well as retired folks. We need a state government that works for the people that work and that are retiring here and have built a worthwhile, meaningful legacy for themselves. We have to defend our way of life. We can do that by truly electing people that bring people together to get the job done. And that's what I will do as your state senator.
Okay, we're back to 60-second responses. This will be the final question before we give you 2 minutes to close. And the final question is, during this campaign, what have you learned, or have there been any surprises that have changed your mind about anything as you've been out on the campaign trail? And it's Jesse's turn to go first.
Thanks, Merrill. It's been my pleasure to travel around this district for months and learn from people on the peninsula about the things that matter to them, about issues that are important, about what they would like to see from their state government. It's been refreshing to hear that people want the state government to work for them. That's no surprise. It's frustrating when things don't work. It's frustrating when there are people in government that might seek to gain an advantage that doesn't make common sense for regular folks. That's not what I'm about. I'm about getting the job done. It's been very interesting to hear history from people in Moose Pass about the history of their community. It's been great to hear more homesteading stories than I've ever heard before from folks out in Nikiski and Soldotna and all the places in this borough that have, from people that have made this place great for generations. We need to respect the past, but also bring our community forward prosperously into the future.
Thank you. And Tuckerman, anything that you've learned on the campaign trail has changed your mind about anything during this campaign?
Yeah, I have been, and it's been very rewarding, as my opponent said, to talk to people and be at the Wednesday markets, go to the events, go door to door, call people up on the phone, and you see what some of the real concerns are. I mean, one of the concerns is that they're nervous about where this country is headed. Now, it's not really just the state Senate's job. They're really nervous about what's going on in the United States of America, and they want to have a state senator who understands that and realizes that we're in quite a dilemma in the United States with the federal government's inflationary spending, with the strong environmentalist push that is curtailing mining and oil and gas in Alaska and threatening our economy. And they want someone to speak up and stand up for that. They also are really outraged about ranked choice voting. And I didn't realize it was such a wide, I knew people were against it, but having it be one of the top issues on people's minds is a really was startling to me. And I'm absolutely dedicated to repealing it. I've been against it from the beginning. And there are several others. It's really a wonderful thing to campaign.
Okay, we're all in and done, and I want to express my personal appreciation for you sticking to the rules of the time frame and the way you answer the question. I think it's been a great forum, and I'd like to give you the final word with your two-minute closing, Tuckerman.
You want to give me the final word, or you want me to go first again? First at the beginning, first at the end?
Well, let's see. Did he go first for the opening? Tuckerman opened. Okay, then we will let Jesse close. There you go.
Thank you, Merrill. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with all of you. It's clear that we need fiscal stability in our state. We need leadership that is able to make the hard decisions to bring that to fruition and to land the plane at a solution that respects working families here on the Kenai Peninsula. You know, as we do things together, we can all be better off. When I'm flying, the plane is coming in for a landing, I want to land on the amount of runway that we can all buy together, not just the amount of runway that I can pay for myself. But when we do things together, when we join together for a common cause to provide for the needs of basic government service, we can get a good result. What do we get? We get public safety that works. We get troopers that come into column and prisons that keep the bad guys locked up when they deserve to be there. You get schools that deliver excellence in education because they reflect the culture and character of their community. You get an economy that is responsive and provides an economic engine to make families prosperous when they desire to work. My goal as your state senator is to move forward priorities. I will file bills to make our economy much easier to grow. We need to get government out of the way. We need to end monopolies that promote wasteful spending in healthcare. We need to end duplication of services which cause government waste. While we do that, we can prioritize the necessary services that Alaskans rely on to build worthwhile and meaningful lives for themselves. But we need someone that can do the work with everyone in order to get the job done. I'm asking for your vote on November 8th. I appreciate your support. You can find more information at my website at jessebjorkman.com, or you can call me personally. My number is 394-6796. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. And Mr. Babcock, your closing statement, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you all again for attending, being part of the great experiment in the world in self-government is a privilege and an honor to be a candidate and to have helped candidates over the years and encourage people to be involved over the years to make this system work. It's unique in the world, and it is a beautiful, amazing thing, and there's so much at stake, and I would be honored to be a part of it as your representative, your state senator in Juneau. I've been involved for 40 years in civic affairs at all different levels. I've been involved in local volunteer as a mentor with the CBC, with ABC, and mentoring young men. And we've adopted 2 children from China. We have 8 children, Christy and I. We have all these grandchildren. There are lots of reasons for me not to run for office. I spent 40 years doing this. I spent 9 months working for Governor Dunleavy as chief of staff. I worked on massive issues with the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission on the unitization of Prudhoe Bay. There's a lot that I'm already proud of that has been accomplished. The homeschooling statutes in Alaska I worked on as a legislative aide. The right to conceal carry I worked on as a legislative aide. The Agricultural Land Act, the Teacher Tenure Act, all sorts of things that I've been a part of. I'm not one to jump in the front to introduce bills. I want to work with people to get things done. And I've done that behind the scenes for many decades now. But Alaska is at a crossroads. We do have a major fiscal problem. We cannot continue on the roller coaster. And we can't just tax children and seniors and everyone with a permanent fund and say, oh, that's going to solve all our problems. It's not. And a realistic budget, oh, there's so much to talk about. Sorry, my 2 minutes are up. Please vote for Tuckerman Babcock for State Senate. Thank you all again for being here.
Thank you, Tuckerman. And now let's applaud the system that entrusts us to elect our representatives. And we thank the candidate for stepping in and up to serve us as our representative.